Hey everybody, check out the Break the Bell podcast, where we believe your voice is your most powerful weapon. We're a weekly dose of our take on what's going on in the world, mixed with a side of history. Find us wherever podcasts are found or on social media handle at Break the Bell Pod. And most importantly, never stop talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Print Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
Into the world outside your window, but with a little bit of the uncanny and fantastic in between, we're jumping headfirst into the Valiant Universe's attempt to bring in lapsed and new readers alike with an initiative they did a few years ago known as, amongst the fandom world, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. Is it their first film? Is it not? Was it just a big marketing attempt, or was it an attempt to actually make a good original story in order to highlight their characters? We watched the film online, which you can too on YouTube for free, and I've got the graphic novel adaptation with me. Today we're talking Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, and as always, I gotta go ahead and introduce our host, the one and only, the miraculous, marvelous Mr. Mark Clare. Mark, how goes it?
Remzo, it goes well, it goes fun, and I like that we're mixing in more movie reviews. I know that when we first started this podcast, we were solely focused on graphic novels, storylines, and that sort of thing, but just sort of naturally through the course of events and where fan interest lied, we ended up doing those reviews of Wonder Woman 1984 and of the Snyder Cut, and that was basically just due to all the feedback we get. We get awesome feedback from our fans, our patrons that are over in the Second Print Comics Fan Zone, our group on Facebook, and so we like to really respond to this show is really for the people. You know, it's for the people by the people. We're just the channels, essentially. So whatever you guys want, whatever feedback you give, we're gonna shoot it right back at you. So we are back with another film review today, and This one's different, and I knew it existed for many, many years, but I had never actually taken the time to watch it again. Another reason I love this show: it gives me the excuse to dig into things that I otherwise might have just left on the side burner for who knows how long.
Absolutely. And folks, while we are primarily a comic book review show, we do have all the extra bonus content over at the Second Print Comics Patreon. That's at patreon.com/secondprintpod. Try saying that a million times. I just went ahead and recorded a review of the new Invincible series by Robert Kirkman over on Amazon. The first three episodes came out and it is fantastic. I'm talking about that. I'm doing a review contrast the black and white versions of Logan and Zack Snyder's Justice League. And I'm also discussing five actresses who should replace Amber Heard in all future Aquaman films. So if you want to talk more TV and movies weekly at this point, they come out every Sunday. Go ahead and check us out at patreon.com/secondprintpod.
You're called a rambling man for the reason, because you have many, many rants and rambles in you, and the Second Print patrons get to hear them all.
I tell people this all the time. The only reason why I went into podcasting is because I couldn't shut up and I didn't want to go get a part-time job at Baskin Robbins. So it was either learn how to do this and do it very well, or go ahead and man a cash register, which there's nothing wrong with it. I just wanted to do something a little bit different. And ultimately, I still had to eventually learn how to use a cash register. But that's how life is.
You couldn't avoid it anyway.
Run from it. Fear it. Loathe it. Destiny ultimately finds a way.
The register always rears its head eventually.
Eventually. Anyway, we did one introduction to the Valiant Universe way yonder back. We did an episode talking all about Exo Manowar. And, you know, the Valiant Universe, I feel like for a lot of people, that's not how they get into comics. The way I've always seen it is they get into Marvel or DC, and then they get into some of the other stuff like Image, Dark Horse, IDW, and Valiant. And what's insane about it is, like, Valiant has one of the strongest fan bases in all of print comics. I'm just talking print exclusively. They usually dominate the sales charts at local comic book shops. That, and they have the third largest, in sync, shared comic book universe, much like you have with DC and Marvel. So the fact that now they're starting to get a little bit of playtime in the sandbox in terms of commercial success and, you know, animation, games, movies, comics, etc., you'd think that they would be a little bit larger. So what they wanted to do, I think it was back in 2017, what they did was they teamed up with Bat in the Sun Studios. Bat in the Sun Studios is known for doing fan films about Nightwing. They do the Superpowered Beatdown show where they take characters from across different companies and stuff like that. And they'll have like the Winter Soldier fight Nightwing, or the Punisher fight Red Robin, or freaking Spider-Man fight Darth Maul. It's awesome. These guys put a ton of effort and they are incredibly, insanely talented. So what they wanted to do was Valiant reached out to them and said, hey, we want to do a free miniseries, a digital only YouTube based series focused on one of our more popular characters, Ninjak, or Ninja K, for those of you who are old like Mark. And what they wanted to do is they wanted this to basically be their big introduction for people. So what they did was they casted the gentleman who played Deadshot in the Arrow TV show. They had him play Ninjak. Then they went ahead and got the guy who was the Red Ranger from Power Rangers. And those, I don't really remember their names, but we all have some memory of them at some point.
I think it was wasn't it the Green Ranger?
I think it was the Green or the Red Ranger.
See, I grew up actually watching Power Rangers. So Tommy Oliver, the Green Ranger, I think he's the same guy that once tried to challenge CM Punk to a Ultimate Fighting MMA match. But that never happened.
Ooh, how'd that go?
It never happened.
Never happened?
No, never happened. He tried to call him out, but it didn't work.
Oof. Well, anyway, what they did was they got him to play Bloodshot in this, and a few other people that you may have seen in, you know, like TV soap dramas and stuff like that. And they did it on a short budget. It's about an hour long at most. And then what they did was they came out with a graphic novel version, which I've got here, which came out, I think, the same year. What they basically did was they took the storyboards for this and they basically colored it and then put word balloons over it. So what we can kind of do, Mark, is I don't want necessarily follow a strict format with this. We can kind of just talk about it going forward, or we could do kind of like a play-by-play with the story and discuss what we liked, what we didn't like, and where Valiant kind of succeeded and failed at certain points. Because I love this film, but it's not the best thing, especially when you look around at what we've been getting from like Marvel Studios and Warner Brothers and even some other digital-only series over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll let you guide it whichever way you choose. But ultimately, this is, I think, your enjoyment of this film or lack thereof will entirely come down to your expectations of it. If you're coming into it expecting something on the level of an MCU film or expecting something on the level of Zack Snyder's Justice League, yes, you're gonna be extremely disappointed. But if you have the expectations, if you have expectations of just wanting to see what this is about and wanting to maybe get some exposure to the Valiant universe in a pretty easy way without having to dive all the way into a graphic novel just to sort of understand who these characters are, I would say that this might, like, for me, this exceeded my expectations, but it's because of where my expectations were. And I think that's just, you know, it's all about where you're coming from on that. So we can take it any way you want, but I think that when you go either listening to this review or if you want to pause right here, go watch the movie first. You should be able to find it on YouTube or various other channels. You know, I would just go in with the mindset of keep an open mind. Don't expect a blockbuster multi-million-dollar production, because it is not that. It is probably more in the level of a budget of like a fan film almost. But this is probably better than a fan film for sure, and better production value than a fan film, but much lower than that of, you know, a blockbuster, you know, Marvel Studios produced or Warner Brothers produced movie.
Absolutely. So what we'll kind of do is we'll just kind of do the play by play and kind of just break it down from there about what we like and what we don't like. So basically the film starts off with Agent Neville from MI6. Now, MI6 kind of takes the place of S.H.I.E.L.D. in this case, and they even have their own version of the Avengers called the Unity. It's kind of hard not to be compared to the Avengers because it is really basically their version of the Avengers. But what ends up happening is you've got this crazy assassin named Roku. Roku's a badass bitch, okay? She's got like Medusa type hair, and it can turn into basically steel tendrils and stab the living shit out of you. So what ends up happening is Agent Neville, who's basically the agent who represents and is the liaison to the Unity, which is a special superhuman task force that's run by MI6. Somebody goes ahead and they kidnap his wife, his ex-wife, and his daughter, ends up being the super assassin Roku. Why? We don't quite know yet. Meanwhile, what we have is we have Agent Colin. What's his name?
Colin King.
I always remember Colin King. I always think it's like Colin Prince or something else. And I like Ninjak. It's just his last name. I don't know why. It's simple.
That
it
would
always
be
catches
if,
me.
If Colin King married Wonder Woman and took her last name.
Oh, that's a comic book shipping I would probably really enjoy.
That'd be a hell of a pair, actually.
That would be cool. The banter between them would be badass. But basically, Colin King, he's a MI6 agent. He goes by Ninjak. His actual code name is Ninja K, but Ninja K sounds kind of stupid, so everyone's just been calling him Ninjak for 20 years.
Yeah, it took me. I didn't realize until the... It might not have always been the case. I think in the 90s comics, he really just was a guy named Ninjak, but in the Matt Kent written Redux that came out, I think first in 2013, that's where the current continuity all stems from, is when he introduced the concept that there were these several, there was several iterations of this character. Basically, it was like a mantle that several held. So there was Ninja A, Ninja B, Ninja C, Ninja et cetera, until we get to Colin King, who is Ninja K. But as you said, not that catchy, so they just went with Ninjak. I wonder what the other ones went on, because I can't see anything like Ninjab with Ninja B or Ninjaj. I mean, yeah.
No, nobody cared beyond that letter.
This is the only one that is really conducive to just saying it as it's spelled out, whereas everyone else is going to have a much weirder time doing that.
Just accept it, and it all works from there. But anyway, Colin King is an MI6 agent. Sometimes he's kind of a mercenary. He kind of jumps between working for them exclusively and working for them on a case-by-case basis. But, Colin lands in Paris. He's meeting up with one of his liaisons, MI6 agent named Vivian. And just off the bat, what you're being introduced to is this kind of guy who's like a mix between Batman and James Bond. Because he's suave, he's very comfortable with himself. Unlike Bruce Wayne, who always is kind of like, faking it, because ultimately he is Batman and his alter ego is Bruce Wayne, if you can kind of buy that. Whereas of Colin, he could be either or. So he walks in, he's wearing the suit and tie, he's going through all these gadgets, he's hitting on the cute blonde. And next thing you know, as they're getting comfortable, these ninjas, like in any James Bond-esque fashion, these ninjas jump through the window. Now, typically for like fan films like this, the action is really truncated. There's only so much you can do with choreography. There's only so much you can do with special effects. But this dude who's playing Ninjak, he legit looks like he can beat the shit out of some ninjas. So, I mean, he's just kicking ass. He's throwing kicks everywhere. Vivian's pulled out a gun. There are explosions in the room. Just off the bat, like, I remember watching early fan films, like with Batman and other characters in the early 2000s on YouTube, when people could finally do this type of thing. And the action was never cool. But Bat in the Sky Studios has really made it, one of the things they're known for. Like, their action choreography is freaking badass. And I'm looking at the panels here, and I pulled up one of the clips to kind of just watch the play-by-play. This matches a lot of the storyboarding they did. They had a big role in how they were going to do the choreography. So, I mean, this fight goes on for at least 2-3 minutes. Mark, this is kind of like the introduction to the film. What were your thoughts going in?
I really enjoyed it. They came hot out of the gate with characters I recognized, because I had been a reader of both the 90s Ninjak as well as this newer iteration that came out, again, starting in like 2013. And the character of Roku is very specific to this newer iteration of Ninjak. I think Matt Kent created Roku, and I love Roku. Roku's badass in the comics. I think is a badass version that we see here in the film, and it's a really good action scene to start things off. And I guess that's the first thing that hit me, was really it's really hard to peg exactly how the feel of this movie. But I guess the best way I could describe it is like I don't want to say this degrading the filmmakers, but it just feels like to me a very well done fan film. If that makes sense, it has good production quality, probably certainly much better than I would do like in my house with some friends or anything like that. But you can clearly tell it is sort of at the B or C level of production. Both on
it's John Wick on a Dollar General budget.
Exactly. It's John Wick on a budget. But I think everyone involved in this, I think the actors are probably my highlight here, because even though all of them are essentially like B or C level actors, they all do a really good job here in portraying the characters they're meant to portray. And I think, again, I'm not sure what the actor's name is, but the guy that is playing Ninjak, I think he fills the role of Colin King about as perfectly as you could. I could say he's probably, maybe at the end we'll go through our best and worst actors of this whole thing, but I would put him towards the top, this guy that plays Colin King. Let me see if I can find his name.
Yeah, could you pull up the cast
list?
Yeah,
I actually have it here in front of me on IMDb. Michael Rowe is his name. Michael Rowe.
And he was cool as Deadshot in Arrow. I actually liked him better than Will Smith. And I remember Will Smith played Deadshot in Suicide Squad. And I was initially like, oh, Will Smith is coming in. He's going to be fucking awesome. And Will Smith didn't do bad in Suicide Squad. I think it was just that I had more time to watch Michael Rowe's portrayal as Deadshot on Arrow. And because of that, I just became a little bit more biased.
I think Will Smith did a fine acting job in that film, but he didn't feel like Deadshot.
Yeah, there's a reason why when they asked him to come back for Suicide Squad 2, he was like, hell nah.
He's like, nah, man, those fans were crushing me on that. I don't want to deal with these idiots on Twitter anymore. No, get Idris Elba. He did Cats. He'll do anything. He was naked in Cats. Just give him a call. Trust me, he has no
sense. Hashtag release the butthole cut. Anyway, we're back.
Who thought that
and,
joke would carry over from podcast to podcast?
Hey, it's a movement. It's a lifestyle choice.
That actually is a joke that was made not on Second Print Comics, and I'm not even sure if you realize that because we've done so many different podcasts together lately. So it's an Easter egg for fans that listen to us on all our various works.
See, it's the shared podcast universe.
Exactly.
Man, I just realized that, and it's like, man, this is all.
They
is
all
kind of
blend together at some point, don't they?
They do.
That's for the real fans out there.
For the ride or die types. Anyway, we're back
at the
apartment.
That's for the fans that have little Mark and Remzo figurines at their houses.
I don't even have one of those.
Yeah, neither do I. That's why I'm scared of those fans.
I want a bobblehead version of myself. That'd be so cool.
That should be a Patreon level. When we get to a certain level, we're gonna make little bobbleheads and we'll give them to fans at a certain level. That's a promise. I'm not gonna put it on paper until I do some research, but it's a promise that I'll look into it. I like the idea.
Why not start a cult at this point?
Yeah.
Global domination, Mark. Global domination.
That's essentially what this is. It's basically a cult with extra steps. That's what we'll call
it. The second print cult. That's it. Anyway, we're back at the apartment. The ninjas have overwhelmed Ninjak, and he could theoretically take them all out. But what ends up happening is Roku gets in the room, and she takes Vivian hostage. And long story short, Roku and Ninjak have some history. They don't really talk about it here. You've got to read more of the graphic novels to understand how these two know each other. But long story short, in the sub-basement of MI6 is a thing called Asset 147. And what she wants him to do is go in and steal it for her. At this point, he's like, nah, why would I do that? And then she pulls out an iPad, and you see that she has taken Agent Neville's ex-wife and daughter hostage. And to kind of let him know how serious he is.
And Ninjak said, well, it's just his ex-wife, so...
Yeah, I mean, he could get married again, and he could have other kids.
Like, I like the guy, but I mean, he's kind of moved on already. Okay, the daughter too. All right, fine.
But you see, he's kind of just looking at the situation. He's like, "Come on, like you really expect me to do this to show how serious she is?" And this is the first display of her power, which on page I'm looking at it here, and it looks really terrifying. In the film, it's kind of that's like, you know, ABC's or CBS's Medusa from Inhumans. What she does is she takes her one strand of her hair and she punctures Vivian's head.
It's pretty badass.
Like, yeah, like it's pretty, like it's kind of CGI weirdness going on, but the way she murders her, like we didn't expect to see that up front. Like we are getting accustomed to the level of violence we're going to see here.
No, I thought they were introducing us to Ninjak's love interest for the whole film, and then, well, I guess not.
No, she dead. And at that point, you know, he's screaming like, I'll never help you. And, you know, she's like, yeah, you kind of will, because I just did this. Imagine what I'm going to do to his ex-wife and child. So at this point, she leaves and Ninjak has really no choice. He has to go ahead and break into MI6. So that way he can deliver the asset to her. So just right there, we're at the end of that scene. Medusa, scary or not scary?
You mean Roku?
Roku. She's a ripoff Medusa, but she's cool in her own way. So I feel bad because she is kind of original, but I keep reverting back to that.
I think she's a much cooler character than Medusa from the Marvel comics. I don't know if she can rival Medusa from Greek mythology because she's pretty badass. She turns your ass to stone if you just look at her snake head. But compared to the Marvel comics Inhumans iteration, I think she's a much cooler character. way cooler. It's like a, it's like the evil, demonic, badass version of Medusa. And yeah, I really like Roku. I really like Roku in the comics, and I think she does a pretty damn good portrayal here.
Yeah. So anyway, we kind of skip a few scenes. Ninjak has broken into the sub-basement of MI6. At this point, Agent Neville calls Major Capshaw, who's kind of like their version of Maria Hill, and Livewire. Livewire has the ability. She has like basic electric powers, but she can also talk to machines. So think of somewhere between Electro and Cyborg. He's coming up the elevator and they're like, okay, somebody's breached. He's about to get out of the elevator. Capshaw, Livewire, Neville, and a bunch of other agents go ahead and they surround the elevator. At this point, Ninjak walks out with the briefcase and they're like, scene. Ninjak, what the hell is going on? And he's like, I need to go. I'll explain later. And he's like, you can't just go with this. So at this point, Ninjak's just like, you know, I don't have any other choice. I'm just going to have to go through you all. So right now, the fight just straight out of like the Warriors happens. He just starts lunging and everyone is shooting and he's just ripping people apart like John Wick.
Yeah, and Roku is watching it all. I guess she can kind of like see it through she must have implanted something like on his visor because she's kind of like watching it through Ninjak's point of view, which is kind of a cool thing to keep coming back to. And Ninjak even has to take out Neville. He kind of has to like knock him out in the elevator. But this scene where Ninjak just goes nuts and takes out all the MI6 guys, it works so perfectly because, you know, when you know the story and you know that he's not really gone bad as they kind of think he has, he's actually really careful when you watch this fight scene. Like, he takes everybody out, but he doesn't kill anybody. He just kind of like knocks them out, knocks them to the side, defends himself, but he doesn't kill any of the agents. So you can tell he's kind of like, it's a really awesome action scene and it's as violent as you can be without having blood and death. And I think it really goes to show you what Ninjak's character is here. He's so skilled that he can take you out any way he wants. He can take you out by just being a crazy ninja and not killing you. He could kill you if he wanted to, but in here, because he really is a hero, he's really not turning on MI6. He's actually just trying to help his friend Neville, but he can't tell him, because if he tells him, it's going to ruin the whole thing. So I think this is an awesome action scene, and while also displaying the character of Colin King.
Yeah, I mean, what really makes me compare him to Batman in many cases is, unlike other ninja-themed heroes like Snake Eyes or Deadpool, he really does rely on his gadgets. I think Ninjak Volume 1, The Weaponeer, and Unity Volume 1, To Kill a King, you see a lot of Ninjak using his knowledge of technology and his gadgets really in his favor, because he could easily be like a blunt force object and just beat the shit out of people and stab them. But he's smart, and that's where people undermine him, because they see him as just a weapon, but they don't realize that the real weapon is his brain. And he's got shit shooting out of his gauntlets. As Livewire is about to electrocute him, he throws like this silly putty on her hands.
Kind of like Daredevil meets Tony Stark meets Sherlock Holmes. He's a little bit,
investigator
plus like a techno gadget user, or maybe you could compare more to Batman than like Tony Stark, just with the use of the gadgets, but with also the ninja skills of like a Daredevil, except he can see too, so that's nice.
Yeah, and at this point, what he realizes is he's not going to be able to outpower them for long. He doesn't have enough gadgets to get out. So what he forces Livewire to do is to actually shoot a bolt of lightning at him as he's running in front of a window. And at this point, he throws out some smoke grenades. So as she shoots him, she thinks that she's taking him down. He needed to get pushed out the bulletproof glass. So he gets shot out to escape like he wanted. And then the room is completely covered in smoke. So Livewire, Capshaw, and the other MI6 agents are just like, shit, like, he's gone, and what did he take? And at this point, Neville's like, okay, now we gotta figure out what's going on, but before we do that, we need the Unity. Now, when you call in the Unity, something is serious. And at this point, who is the Unity in this specific story? We've got Bloodshot, the unkillable Terminator that he is. We've got Archer and Armstrong. We've got Exo Manowar. We've got Gilad, the Eternal Warrior, along with Livewire. So right now, obviously, what's ever in that briefcase is a Unity level threat.
Indeed, yeah. And I enjoyed the scene where Neville is kind of calling on each of these heroes individually while they're in the middle of their you know, various action. Like, Bloodshot's just in the middle of like just outright murdering a bunch of dudes, and then Neville just kind of calls him. He's like, all right, one second, and I just gotta like take this grenade first, and then I'll be right with you. And I really like too, like Bloodshot pulls this knife right out of his head and then gets shot like in the head. And then you immediately like see him regenerate that wound. So you, in each scene where Neville is contacting these characters, you also get a glimpse into their powers as well. So you see like, you know, Bloodshot's crazy healing powers here too.
Speaking of which, so I won't go through like each introduction because you know, some of it's a little bit redundant, but let's just go through the characters. So you already went through Bloodshot. Some of these folks I knew going into this, some of them I was introduced to, and I considered myself kind of a Valiant novice at the time when I started reading them in 2018. Archer and Armstrong, do you know what the deal with them is?
That is one of these characters that I've had the least exposure to. I just kind of know them from a vague familiarity with the Valiant universe, but I forget which is which. One of them is a drunk, and one of them is just like this little punk kid. And I'm not really sure what their powers are.
So Archer is the kid and Armstrong is the guy. Armstrong is Gilad's brother. So he's also an eternal warrior in his own right. And Archer was a kid who grew up in like this death assassin cult who was actually hired to kill Armstrong. But they end up becoming friends and going on like buddy cop adventures throughout the world.
Gotcha. Yeah. And appropriately, we meet them in a bar.
Yeah, as buddies should. Then we've got, you know, Exo Manowar, Arik of Dacia, who has the Shannara armor, which is the most powerful weapon in the universe. And then we've got Gilad, the Eternal Warrior. I think Gilad's probably the most underrated Valiant character. Have you read much on him?
Not too much. I mostly know that character, again, just from his crossing through of other characters, especially within the first Unity series is where it's actually kind of like this one, except it's all these characters united to try to take down Exo Manowar when he first comes to Earth. That's like kind of how this team came together in the first place. Yeah. In the comics. They brought the team together because there was this extra, you know, extraterrestrial threat of the Exo Manowar. So this team kind of came together to take him out. And of course, they all ended up joining together and being happy friends, but first Gilad was one of the people, you know, involved in that. So I really only know him from that. I've never read his own individual series, but in this film he is played by John Hennigan. Do you know what else John Hennigan is from?
I don't.
Of course you don't, because you're uneducated and uncultured. John Hennigan is a former WWE wrestler, actually current WWE wrestler, John Morrison. He was also in the promotion Lucha Underground for several years. I'm trying to remember what his name, I think he was just called like Johnny Lucha or something like that. Then he's always Johnny something wherever he goes. That's kind of his gimmick in the wrestling world. When he was in Impact Wrestling, he was Johnny Impact. But in between his wrestling careers, he's had various stints with various wrestling promotions over the years, starting in WWE, bouncing through a lot of independent circuits. And during that time, he's kind of established himself as a fairly established as you can be, like C-level actor. So he's been in a lot of these sort of like B movies. He's in a lot of random B movies. Like sometimes I'll just see a movie somewhere on Netflix or something that is a C-level movie and I'll notice, oh, John Hennigan's in it. So he's in a lot of, I guess, this level production of film. But I think why he's really good in a lot of this stuff is A, he kind of has acting chops in a sense from being a wrestler. I mean, a wrestler is his own stuntman and an actor and everything wrapped in one. So it really is the perfect profession to kind of set you up for this style of acting where I'm pretty sure he does a lot of his own kind of stunt work here too. So I thought the casting was really well. I thought John Morrison or John Hennigan as his real name is did an awesome job as G-Lad.
Yeah. And I mean, you can read more about him in Unity. Of course, he's introduced into the Valiant universe and Exo Manowar Volume 2, but he had a great series on his own called The Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. It's awesome. And all I can really say that, and it won't do him justice, is Gilad the Eternal Warrior is basically what you get when you get Thor and Wolverine.
That's about right.
He is a very, very like compelling character in his own right. And
he's kind of like a protector of the Earth too. So he's like this immortal being that, hence the name Eternal Warrior, who is just, you know, he's always there to just, you know, keep protecting stuff, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so Livewire, Capshaw, and Neville have all gone, and they've recruited all these folks because this is a Unity-level threat. We're introduced to all of them, and then this is where we get our first fight. So Bloodshot is the first one on the scene. He's riding his motorcycle. He's just beating up a whole bunch of guys, and everyone thinks, okay, Bloodshot's Bloodshot's Bloodshot. He's like the Punisher and Wolverine. He, nothing can kill him. He'll easily take down Ninjak. So they go ahead and trace him over to a warehouse where Ninjak is trying to get some first aid applied to himself because he got so beat up in his last fight with Livefire and the MI6 agents. But Ninjak is smart. He knows that if I'm going to go ahead and hide somewhere, I might as well set up some traps. So what he does is he sets up some mines and other stuff to go ahead and alert him and protect him from whoever's there. But what ends up happening is he sees, oh shit, the person who's coming to get me is freaking Bloodshot at this point.
It's like, son of a bitch, really? Like, after all this shit I've been dealing with the last day or so, the first guy I got to fight is freaking Bloodshot. My God, you couldn't just send these, like, MI6 lackeys again. I have to deal with this guy who immediately heals from anything I do to him.
Yeah, and I mean, this is one of those areas of the film where you really see the budget in play, because he heals like Wolverine. What did you think of how they show him healing in this film, though?
I mean, it's not the best effects I've ever seen. I would say they just kind of like I think he loses an arm. Is this the fight where he loses an arm? And then the arm.
He loses an arm and he loses a leg.
Yeah, and they just kind of like digitally reappear, in not the most realistic of fashions. There's no blood or I think there is blood, but it just looks. I don't know. It's the level of production you would expect from this kind of film, I guess. You know. So again, it's all about expectations here. I'm not expecting Marvel type effects.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing saving him is that we got the dude from Power Rangers on here. Who's that guy?
That's Jason David Frank. Is his name. He played the Green Ranger on Power Rangers at the exact time when I would occasionally watch that show as a young teenager. And if you want to age me based off of that, feel free to do your own research and you can figure it out.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's like the effects make it look kind of stupid, but luckily the fight choreography actually pulls it off. So Ninjak and Bloodshot are just going back and forth. It's a pretty 50-50 fight.
I really enjoy, like, they always go back to the reaction shots from Roku during these fight scenes too. And it's just, it's really fun because she's just kind of sadistic. Like, she's enjoying the whole thing. She enjoys, like, when Ninjak gets the upper hand because she's glad to see that, you know, she's sending him on this mission and she wants him to complete this mission, but she also enjoys when he's getting his ass kicked because she's his enemy. So it's like, she's just, no matter what, where we are in the battle, she's kind of just like watching and kind of enjoying it, seeing it all unfold, and with her really creepy eyes where she has no pupils. She just has like the whites of her eyes. So yeah, I really love the portrayal of Roku here. I think it's about the best they could possibly do.
Yeah, and I mean, I always, like I mentioned earlier, I'm always comparing her to Medusa just because Medusa came first, but she's cooler than Medusa.
Way cooler.
Anyway, the only way that Ninjak can get out of this fight is he sees a canister for liquid nitrogen and he basically stabs it into Bloodshot, basically freezing him, because he knows, I don't want to kill him because he's my friend, but I got to stop him. And this is about the only thing that can stop him, because the nanites in his blood are going to take forever to get this guy back up.
Yeah, that's another thing I just love about the character of Colin King is that pretty much, and this is true in the comics too, I mean, any situation, ultimately he pretty much usually ends up getting out of the major battles or of any kind of really, really difficult situation he gets put in with his wit, with his intellect. Even though he has all the gadgets, has all the skills, it always comes down to he outsmarts his opponent or he outsmarts the situation. That's consistent with the character in the comics and pretty consistent with things in this film.
Yeah, so now we move on to our next fight. Ninjak is on a motorcycle. He's trying to escape. So now they go ahead and they send Arik, a.k.a. Exo Manowar, to find him. Now, Arik, he's always the blunt force object. He's always the guy that's going to cause the most damage. So what he ends up doing is he ends up giving him, basically, it's their version of a car chase. It's Arik in the sky shooting down at Ninjak as Ninjak is hiding. And ultimately, Ninjak knows that he can't beat Arik. There's nothing he can do that can beat him while he's in the armor. So at one point, he tricks Exo Manowar into flying into a semi-truck. He does the cool slide under the truck with the motorcycle thing you've seen in like Fast and Furious, stuff like that. So Exo is like, ah, man, he got the upper hand on me for a minute. He chases him to some woods. And he uses his visor to go ahead and actually see through the trees and like an X-ray vision, so he can see Ninjak trying to, you know, catch his breath. So he pulls up his gauntlet. He's about to fire a missile at him. And next, you know, Gilad comes over and he's like, Arik, stop. It should be me who does it. We owe him that much. And at this point, Arik is like, no, we gotta stop him, man. We gotta get the asset. And he's like, listen, just let me go talk to him. And if it doesn't work, I'll go ahead and I'll take him out. There was no way on their budget they could possibly make Exo Manowar look good, because when you see him just standing in the costume, it's pretty cool. But when you see him flying and blasting lasers and stuff, it kind of looks it kind of looks shitty. Like maybe in like the late 90s, this will have been like peak CGI, but watching this like in the late 2010s, it's just one of those things where it's like, you could, if you were going to do this, maybe leave him out. But then again, he's also one of Valiant's biggest stars. So if you leave him out, then you're just going to piss off people too. So there was a lose-lose situation with this.
Yeah, it's hard to leave the character out because he really is like a pinnacle of the Valiant universe and of the Unity team. And if the point of this is to introduce...
He's their Superman.
Yeah, exactly. And if the point of this is to introduce people to your universe, you can't really leave him out. I actually thought the character, like the actor I thought was pretty effective as Arik. And I think he looked a lot cooler when he's interacting with Colin just in the suit, you know, just in his costume. Although even that is a little bit, looks a little Halloween-y. Like, you know, of course I'm lowering my standards here. But yeah, when they use the effects, like the energy stuff, it kind of reminds me, like my wife and I were just rewatching the show. Well, it's the first time for her, but I'm rewatching the show Lost. Have you ever seen the show Lost?
Oh man, I got lost after season 3, well, no pun intended.
You get lost in it. That's actually the tipping point, not to go into a whole different review, but like basically that around season 3, you could tell, because this is probably why a lot of people get lost in season 3, because that is where they start to have some episodes that are kind of meaningless and kind of go nowhere. Like there's an episode where Hurley just finds a van and that's the whole episode. There's an episode where we see a flashback of how Jack got his tattoos. Like they don't really mean anything because the writers were kind of like stalling because they didn't know when the show was going to end, so they're waiting to jump to their to the story that really brought them to the end. So midway through the show, they made a deal with the ABC and said, like, look, we need to know the end of the show. So they made a deal, they decided the exact end date, and then they built everything speedily, not speedily, it took three more seasons, but towards that end goal, and the show is a lot more focused from that point forward. So if you make it to the end of season 3, it gets really good. You know, there's people have different opinions about that, but I really enjoyed the show from that point onward because it really has a focus and a direction. It doesn't have a lot of those meaningless episodes. But anyway, that was my side review of the show Lost. The point of this was that while rewatching this, you know, this came out and I think first came out in 2004, probably ran to like 2010, I'm guessing. And when you see the special effects, they don't use special effects that often in the show, but when they do, they're so bad. It's unbelievable how bad they are just from 10 years
ago. I remember the polar bear. The polar bear was
actually
atrocious.
Done well. I mean, relatively to these other effects, but you know, when they have the smoke monster, I mean, it looks like animation a college student would do in like After Effects, and I don't know why. And that is kind of an insult to college students because it really just looks so shitty that you can't.
Hey, they know they're on a budget.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's because it's a TV budget, but this is one of the most expensive shows ever made too, and it's ABC. You'd think they'd have something better, but I think it was just indicative even of how far special effects have come, even in 10 years. Like you would never see effects like this, you know, 10 years later on like a Marvel or you know Marvel show or a DC show,
except Inhumans.
I never watched that, so probably for good reason.
It is like go try and get a scene of Medusa from Inhumans and compare her powers in the first episode to Roku in this series, and it's night and day. They actually made Roku look more like how Medusa should have looked in the Inhumans show.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a long-winded way to say that these effects remind me of mid-2000s Lost effects, which is to say not very good.
Respectable, but atrocious.
Exactly. Like, I'm not saying I could do better, but I could probably do close, to be honest.
Anyway, Gilad corners Colin over to this waterfall where they talk, and basically Gilad is like, listen, man, what you've got in that briefcase, that book is the Book of the Dead. That book can bring about the end of the world. No wonder Roku wants it. And at this point, Colin is like, listen, I don't have time to explain everything to you, which I feel is kind of a gimmick, because all you have to say is she's got Neville's ex-wife and kid hostage.
Well, I think it does kind of make sense, though, because she is monitoring everything through him.
Oh, right, because the retinal thing.
I thought that for a second, too. I was like, why not just tell him? Like, you know, but then I think it is because that's why she has the thing where she's monitoring him, and she's like, if you tell anybody, like, they're dead. So that's why he's kind of stuck, where he's trying to, you know, defend himself against his friends, trying to do the right thing and say, Neville's family, but also can't actually tell anybody what's going on, which is why they just kind of think, well, I guess he must have gone bad.
Yeah, speaking of which, what ends up happening is Bloodshot ends up catching up with them after thawing out, and while Gilad is talking to Ninjak, he goes ahead and he actually sets up a sniper's post, and as Ninjak and Gilad are about to fight each other because, you know, they couldn't explain their way out of this, Bloodshot takes the shot and shoots him, and you know, Ninjak basically falls off of the waterfall, and for all intents and purposes, he's actually dead.
Or is he?
Or is he?
Actually, and this is when things get cool. What I love about this is they really do invoke so many various elements of the Valiant universe that it really is like, it really is a great like intro to Valiant 101. If you can, you know, look past some of the cheesiness and some of the, you know, maybe C or B level acting and maybe even D level effects. If you're just trying to get a taste of like what these characters are at their core, you kind of really do get it in this film.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing I like about them that I think makes them unique from all the other superhero teams, none of these guys are actually friends. Like, none of them actually like each other. And that's where you get a lot of the cool banter, because even in the Unity comics and other stuff, they're not like the Avengers who were going out for shawarmas, or the Justice League who were all like, they all genuinely like each other. All these guys are here because they're forced to be here.
Yeah, and they even show some flashback scenes earlier in the film where they show like some training scenes of the team first coming together, and you see like, you see them really not getting along at all. Especially they show like a big fight between Bloodshot and Exo Manowar they get into. It and you know there's a lot of egos here. None of these guys, these are all like their own kind of leader. None of these guys really are fit for the team environment, so when they're put into it, it's really just more like a bunch of individuals that are kind of trying to work together than a cohesive team like you might get out of, you know, the Avengers or the Justice League.
Yeah, so basically what ends up happening is Ninjak is dead, but he ends up going to one of their levels of hell. So in the Valiant universe, you don't just have heaven and hell. You have different levels of hell and different levels of heaven, depending on where you go. So Ninjak gets sent to the dead side, which is basically where bad guys go when it's still not ultimately determined whether or not they should be sent back to live or whether they're going to stay here. So it's kind of like purgatory for when you're almost dead, but they're going to basically assess who you are. And what ends up happening is he encounters another Valiant hero named Shadow Man.
I loved this part because I was not expecting it. It was just advertised as the Unity, which, Shadow Man is not historically a part of in the comics, but he is a character I've always thought was really, really cool. And I did enjoy his portrayal here. Actually, the CGI portraying the dead side was actually, you know, decent here.
This is actually probably the best in the whole film.
Yeah, this is cool, really cool, this scene.
Yeah, so basically Shadow Man is like, Calling King, Ninjak, you're not supposed to be here. What the hell are you doing here, man?
He's like, you're not a bad guy. Wait,
yeah, he's like, what ended up happening? Who forced you to betray them? I mean, who did this to you, Ninjak? So Ninjak is basically like, listen, I didn't have a choice. It was Roku. She has Neville's family.
And he can talk here because he's in the dead side, so I don't think she can monitor him like she could.
Because he dead. Basically. So he basically goes ahead and explains everything. And then he's like, and you know what? Not only did I fail them because I'm dead, but now I failed the world because somehow somebody's going to get a hold of the Book of the Dead. So what Shadow Man ends up doing is he actually sends Ninjak back to the land of the living. And at this point, you've got Exo, Bloodshot, and Gilad, they're all trying to figure out, what do we do with his body? Do we give him like a warrior's burial or something? And then at this point, you know, he comes back and he's basically like, listen, guys, I'm back now. Everything is good because when Shadow Man brought me back, he disabled the retinal retinal camera that Roku's been using to track me. So now she can't track me. I can get this done. Here's what's actually been going on.
I enjoyed everything about how they handled this, because you're not expecting to see Colin King, get killed in the middle of the film, but it really just gave you a peek into another character in the Valiant universe, and another you know, a way you can kind of cheat death here is, I guess in this case, Shadow Man can just send you back.
Yeah, so at this point, Ninjak is off trying to find Roku in the book. Everyone is back at Neville's office, and Shadow Man comes in, and then he explains to them everything that's happened. So at this point, they're like, shit, we should have known that Ninjak just didn't turn evil all of a sudden.
Yeah, Shadow Man is basically the go-between here, because Ninjak was able to speak to him in the dead side, and then he can come out and kind of materialize and talk to these guys in the church. I actually really like this is actually so much better than the effects of Lost when he emerges from the smoke, when Shadow Man kind of emerges in this church that they're for some reason meeting in, and explains the whole thing, and then they kind of have the realization, oh yeah, duh, of course Ninjak didn't just randomly turn bad, maybe we shouldn't have killed him. Oops. Yeah. But luckily Shadow Man's here and he's okay.
So this is where we get to our last obligatory fight. Ninjak needs to rest. He stops by a bar. Who's at the bar? Archer and Armstrong. And not to get too much into this, because it's really just a generic fight.
It's my favorite fight scene, though. I mean, my favorite, you know,
it's the most slapsticky.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like the actors. Like, they're really hamming it up. Like, if you see some actors who are really kind of trying to ham up their roles, where it's like they're trying to take it serious, but they're taking it so seriously it comes off as stupid, this is it. What did you think of Archer and Armstrong?
Hamming it up is definitely the way to put it. Both of them, like Archer, or I keep getting Archer's the drunk, right? No, Armstrong's the drunk.
Armstrong's the drunk.
Armstrong's the drunk. Yeah, Armstrong is just an over the top drunkard, like you'd expect from this character if you've been following him in the comics. And then, yeah, I really got a kick out of Archer. It's just funny to see the contrast between them, which I think is really the charm of the duo of Archer. Armstrong is just this huge, big drunkard, and Armstrong, I keep messing them up. This is like comics and issues for me, or issues and episodes for me. Archer is like, yeah, he's like a child. I mean,
drunk child.
Yeah, but they both have like serious fighting skills, though. They just have like different styles. Like Archer is able to keep up with Ninjag actually surprisingly well during this. Then you know, while Armstrong has more of just more like a it's clobbering time thing style of fighting, I would attribute to Armstrong here. But I really enjoyed, you can recap it here, I really enjoyed in the middle of this battle how Neville Alcott, because they finally realize, the gang hears what happened from Shadow Man. Then Neville, of course, finds out about it. So he's like, wants to put a stop to this fight because he doesn't want to put a stop to the fight, but he knows why Ninjak is doing it now. So he tries to convey this to Armstrong, gives him a call in the middle of the fight. Armstrong gets like kicked into this stall when he gets the phone, and then Neville's like, hey, I need you to lose the fight, but don't kill Ninjak, don't stop him, like he needs to keep doing what he's doing.
They need to make it look legit, yeah, because somehow they know Roku might find out that
exactly
he's free of all this.
He's saying like, you can't just come out and say, you know, you just got to like lose to him on purpose, basically. And Armstrong's like, what are you saying? Like, whatever, man. Like, he's like, I'm going to go kick this guy's ass. And then he just comes out and like immediately gets his ass. Like, I forget how it actually happens, plays out in the movie, but he gets taken out in like 2 seconds all at once. Ninjak is able to take out both Archer and Armstrong. So it was just a really fun fight scene, and it had a lot of comic relief.
Yeah, so anyway, after that, Ninjak gets over to Roku's lair. Roku has Neville's ex-wife and daughter. Colin has the book. Just as they're about to do the trade, you know, she thinks she's won, and she's actually about to go ahead and let, you know, the hostages go. That's when the Unity bumps in. Everyone just bursts through a wall looking heroic as shit. You see all of them in all of their individual glory, and they start fighting Roku's army of ninja assassins. So at this point, Roku's like, shit, I can't take on the whole Unity. She's running over to this plane that she's got in the strip outside her lair. She's about to get on. As it's taking off, Ninjak is able to get over there. You get to see her do some more shit with her hair, which I think is really cool, because if you got a villain who's that unique in her power set, you might as well show it off. So while it's still a little bit cheesy, I like seeing it, because it's also a power you don't often really see. And like I said, like if you're one of the select poor individuals who had to watch Inhumans because you felt like it was gonna matter, this is the type of stuff you wanted to see from Medusa. So the fact that you're seeing it from somebody who has the same power set but is also incredibly evil, it was awesome. So what does Colin do? He takes out a knife and he starts like cutting off her hair. It actually looks a little bit comical. It's funny. At this point, somehow the pilot gets killed and just the collateral damage of this. So what Colin does is he grabs the book and he jumps out the freaking plane, leaving Roku to die as it's about to crash. As he's about to fall and, you know, meet his maker, Exo Manowar goes ahead and flies in and swoops in, saves him midair. And, you know, basically they get down. They're like, hey, Ninjak, sorry, we all tried to kill you today. And Ninjak's like, nah, I kind of get it. It's kind of a cheesy ending. I mean, Roku dies for all intents and purposes in the crash. But
well, yeah, no, you left out one thing. It's Bloodshot that comes in. It's like Bloodshot is flying this jet along with Exo Manowar flying. Exo dives down and saves Colin King, while Bloodshot just fires missiles and explodes the plane with Roku in it.
He's actually one that
ends up taking her out in the end. And I don't know, I thought that was the scene where Bloodshot is flying, the talk about hamming it up, the scene where he is flying toward in the jet and about to fire these missiles is so extra hammed up. But that is the kind of actor that this Jason David Frank is. He is just a hammed up actor, basically. And yeah, I mean, I think he's actually, of all the portrayals in this, I actually thought the Bloodshot portrayal was the worst. I hate to say it, because he just, I don't know, he came at the across to me as the most cheesy and the most kind of forced. Where, you know, I get that the whole movie is kind of a bit hammy and kind of all the portrayals are hammy in a sense. But I don't know, I found his the toughest to buy, whereas the other characters felt a little more natural to me. Especially, I think one of my we can do favorite actors when we wrap the whole thing up here. But I think there's certain ones that stood out to me more than others in this.
Yeah. So basically that's the film. It's really like, it's a short film. It's really to the point. The story is there, but it was really just a way of introducing you to all of Valiant's heavy hitters. And there are some that they don't include. They didn't include the Harbingers. They didn't include Toyo Harada.
That would have been too much to try to wedge into all this.
Yeah. I mean, I just picked up the death-defying Dr. Mirage. I'm going to read the first volume of that. But like, for the people that are really at the core of the modern Valiant Entertainment universe of heroes, this is it. And I think for the most part, they succeed at that. Now, in terms of quality of movie, that's a whole completely different thing. But all in all, I enjoyed watching this. I've watched it a handful of times since it first came out.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. Is it's fun, it's enjoyable. Like, I doubt any. I mean, there's definitely easy to make criticisms of this film if you're trying to judge it as just a film overall. But if, again, it's all about expectations, like I said in the beginning. If you go to this with the expectations of just wanting to check out this movie and have a rather short, I think it's maybe an hour, 20 minutes, fun time. It's fun. Like, I was pleasantly surprised by it. You know, like I said, it's not an MCU blockbuster. It's not a Snyder cut, nothing like that. But if your expectations are set properly, I think you'll really enjoy this film.
Yeah, in terms of the actors, I think the cast tried their best. I mean, there's only so much you can do when you're on such a limited budget and you're supposed to play superheroes. The guy that played Exo Manowar doesn't really have much dialogue. He's really just there just to fight. And I mean, same thing goes for all the others.
They just cast him because he kind of looks like Chris Hemsworth.
Kinda. I think the guy who played Bloodshot, like, man, there's only so much you could do with that. What's weird now is seeing Vin Diesel as Bloodshot. And it's another one of those things where it's like, what was really the intention of this? Because I feel like Valiant is always kind of pacing themselves for the short-term stuff, and they don't really have a lot of long-term development, because in 2020, the Bloodshot movie came out. And that's a big budget thing with one of the biggest actors in the world. And I mean, it's one of the situations where it's like, if you did not like the superhero genre and you were trying to figure out if you wanted to get into comics, I don't think that watching this was really going to like give you the best impression, just because it is so cheesy. Especially when you look at the world around you and you have so much to compare it to.
Yeah, like, I don't think this film would serve the, like, if this is released to a mass audience with the intention of bringing people into Valiant Comics, I don't think that would be very effective. I think it's more effective as someone who's might be mildly interested in Valiant Comics or in comics in general and just wants to, you know, get a sense of these characters. And I think it serves that purpose well. It's probably not going to pull in non-comic fans from the cold. That I think might give them a different impression. They might say, well, this is just kind of cheesy. So again, it's all about expectations and what audience we're kind of, you know, looking at with this film. Do we want to do like best and worst actors, or I don't know if you want to have what other awards we could have.
Let's go ahead and do that. Let's start with the first one, Ninjak.
We just want to grade the acting performances, and then let's go through a few of the performances, and then we can kind of rate our best and worst. How about
that? Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of fight choreography, he actually did a lot of the choreography himself for him and the other characters. You know, you had to get someone that knew how to fight. We were dealing with Ninjak, who's the marquee character for this story. He had to look badass. And when it comes to those fight scenes, I mean, that's the one thing where it's like, you don't need a lot of money to do that. You just need somebody that knows how to pull it off and make it look cool. In terms of his acting performance, you know, he has to balance himself with a lot of actors. He's not somebody who I think is an amazing actor, but I think he gets the job done. I'm going to give him a 7.
All right, we're going to rate the acting performances on a scale of 1 to 10 in that case. Colin King. Let's see. This guy's name is Michael Rowe. Yeah, I would give him, I mean, I think for the role, he was about as good as he could be at his level of actor. This guy strikes me as someone who would make, like, he'd be like the lead in like a 90s Skinamax movie that you'd stumble upon at like,
wow,
at like 2 in the morning. And he's the one that the wife is having like the affair with. He's like the badass, you know, dude.
He's the bad boy.
Yeah, so that's how I look at this actor. Yeah, I think your score is fair. I would call him a 7 out of 10.
That's such a backhanded compliment,
it really
though.
Is. 7 out of 10. It's kind of like, okay, it's kind of like when we talk about like different cities and comparing hotness in different cities. You know, like an LA 7 might compare it to, say, a, you know, I don't know, what's
DC
a,
6.
Sure, a DC 6. Why not? So I think Colin King is, for this movie, he's like maybe a 9, or, you know, for this level of film. But if you try to put him in an MCU or DCEU blockbuster, maybe he goes down to like a 5. So average at 7 then. So sure, I'll give him a 7.
If I had to cast him in like a big budget film, I would want Ninjak to be Frank Grillo.
Who is Frank Grillo?
Who played played Crossbones in the Captain America movies.
Yeah. I could liken him around that level. That seems fair.
I think that would be pretty awesome. Second, Gilad.
Gilad,
the wrestler.
I'm biased. I'm a pro wrestling fan. I liked seeing wrestlers achieve success outside of the ring, just on a personal level, because these guys can't be killing their bodies like this all the time. There's a reason we have seen, especially in the 2000s, we saw a lot of wrestlers die well before their age. Luckily, I think wrestlers nowadays, I mean, you see wrestlers nowadays at their prime in their mid-40s, these guys weren't even making it that far then. But this is just a nice long-winded way to say I'm glad when I see pro wrestlers able to make it out in some way, shape, or form outside of the ring, because that has a shelf life to it. So the fact that John Hennigan is able to establish himself in some way, like I said, he's been in a lot of films, this kind of ilk of films, and I think he does a pretty good job for what he's supposed to be in them. So I'd actually put him right at the same level as Michael Rowe here. I'd give him like a 7.
He looks the part.
He looks the
part, which is really key. And his long-winded Shakespearean monologues when he's talking to people, it just looks like it's kind of a struggle. But he looks the part, and he, like, when he's on screen, like, he's the character you're paying attention to. I'll give him a 7.
Yeah, for sure. All right, what about let's see, how about the guy that played Exo Manowar? I'm trying to find his name.
3.
Rick of Dacia. Yeah, he was not.
He doesn't act.
He doesn't. He's just kind of there. He's just kind of there to look like a
he's a place filler.
Visigoth warrior. Yeah, I'm not going to crush him as low as a 3, because I think he did. Yeah, you can tell he didn't give him a lot of dialogue either, because actually the character of Eric of Dacia is a much more like intelligent, you know, well-spoken character in the comics. So
I feel like they downgraded him for this, because he's like the homeless Viking guy with the alien suit.
Yeah, his
and
powers.
I'm like, well, this isn't Eric.
Yeah, we never got a full display of or understanding of his powers here, and I think the actor kind of hindered things. I'm not going to be as harsh as you. I'm just going to give him a 5.
He didn't act. That's the thing, though. He didn't act. There was nothing to act.
Yeah. That's not his fault, though, so I can only blame the actor for so much. I'll give him a 5. I'm being nicer to this gentleman. His name is Derek Thieler. Whatever.
I hope he has a great career, and he gets more time to actually act.
This is going to lead to our next career as casting agents, by the way. That's the entire purpose of this podcast, to show how well we can analyze actors.
I think we're moving on to probably my favorite in the film, the woman who plays Roku. She is sexy.
Her name is
Chantel
scary. Barry. Yes.
She is badass and intimidating. And we don't see a lot of female villains on screen, and she owns it. I think I'm going to give her an 8.
I can't put her that high. I thought like visually, I think they did an awesome job with her. And I think she did a pretty good job acting wise, but I also felt a little bit of, and again,
they gave her more talking than they did XO.
Oh yeah. Much more talking.
And like when she's trying to intimidate the hostages, she goes over to Neville's daughter and she's like, "Do you like it when your mother tells you lies? It's not going to be okay. It's not going to be okay at all." I'm watching it. I'm like, damn, girl. That is cold.
Yeah, it's the nature of this film in some way for everything to be a little hammy, a little cheesy. But I did think, I don't know, some of the times when we get shots to her, like reaction shots to her when Colin is fighting other characters, just felt a little over cheesy to me. Just the way she laughed, like, ha, 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 ha. It was kind of like overly villainous, almost too much. So I can't quite put her at an 8, but I do think her performance is otherwise very good. I'm just going to put her right where I have John Hennigan, right where I have Michael Rowe, Colin King. I'm going to give her a 7 as well.
She has more emotional range than Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow.
Whew, that's arguable. That's arguable. That's a fair point.
Who else? Livewire. I feel like, you know,
they didn't really use her much at all in this.
She's not really there. But when she's there at the beginning, like, she looks cool. Like, I feel like a lot of the budget went towards her powers.
They got the look down for sure.
Yeah.
Visually.
I'll give her a six.
Yeah, I'm going to go six.
Only because we got a little bit more of her, but she was believable as her character. All the others, I have to kind of suspend a little bit of belief.
Yeah, why don't we move on to, I'll agree with you as a six there. Why don't we move on to Bloodshot, again, played by Jason David Frank.
Six.
I got to go five. I just thought he was, man, maybe even lower. No, screw
you know, it. I'll go. What are you going to say?
I don't know. I was about to downgrade my downgrade.
I'm going to give him a four.
I'll give him a four too.
Because
he's the worst
actually,
actor in this. And I probably won't rank anyone lower than that, but because I think everyone did an okay enough job. But I thought he was the worst actor in this, which really surprised me because the guy's been around as an actor for like, since I've been a kid. So I thought he would do better. Maybe he was just trying to play the character the way he saw it, but I just found his performance very rigid. I guess it was cringy. Maybe he was trying to be a little more like of a rigid, like robotic character, but that's kind of, I mean, that's sort of how Bloodshot is, but I don't know. It just didn't work for me at all. So it made me
so happier that Vin Diesel is Bloodshot.
Yeah, I still have not seen that Vin Diesel Bloodshot movie.
It's good.
But I'm sure that the bar that has been made for me by Jason David Frank here will, I'm confident it will be exceeded by Vin Diesel.
Immensely.
It actually makes you appreciate actors like Vin Diesel because he actually, you know, he's seen as like not a great actor and, you know, as sort of just like a cheesy action star. But it's watching stuff like this where you really see the difference between a real star and you know, like a B or C level actor. Because if Vin Diesel was in this movie with these guys, he would shine so freaking much and you would give him a 10 out of 10 probably because he, compared to these actors, he has the presence, he does have acting skills. He's a different kind of actor playing a different role and he plays that role well. And the roles he plays are usually kind of, you know, he's not playing Shakespeare, you know, he's playing an action star, but he plays an action star really damn well. And it really stands out by seeing this performance of Bloodshot, this performance of some of these other actors, how much more someone like Vin Diesel actually does bring to a film.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. I'll say four because when he fights, like the warehouse fight scene, which I think is one of the best choreographed fight scenes in the film, the warehouse fight scene is really awesome. And the effects on him when he heals and stuff like that is pretty okay. It's just that when he talks, it's like, dude, shut up. Like you sound like you're still in rehearsal. Just stop. So I'll bring him down to a four. I'll agree with you there.
All right. What about, I can't seem to find this guy's name. Anyway, what about Neville? We could do Neville. And then I was going to say Shadow Man though. I thought he was very brief. Didn't have a lot of roles in the movie, but man, they nailed the character, nailed the voice. Yeah. Like I really enjoyed that performance. I'm actually going to give that one an eight. I thought he did a stellar job. It was very small. But and so, I mean, I don't think he deserves best actor in the film, even though I'm probably rating him higher than many others just because his role was smaller. But I thought for what the role was, just near perfect.
As Shadow Man, you have to be somebody who's both scary and in a way like not too cartoonishly horrifying. He met that really nice middle ground between he's scary, but you can tell there's something going on. Like he's not your generic scary type of character. I'll agree with you. I'll put him at 8.5 because I felt like when he came in, like he really kind of stole the show. And I know I gave Roku an 8 because we saw her a little bit longer, but I'll give him an 8.5 because he's probably the one person who, like, in terms of understanding their character, that's the thing. All these people, all these actors so far, they seem interchangeable with each other. Whereas I don't think I could see anyone from this current cast being able to pull off what he did as Shadow Man.
No, not at all. I mean, yeah, Then lastly, yeah, I think, oh, well, not lastly, we also have, why don't we look at Archer and Armstrong, these two guys. I can't find them in the cast list. I think they confused me with the cast list. It's kind of
incomplete. They probably didn't want to be associated with the film.
Can you please take us off, officer?
You don't have to pay us for this. Let's just part ways and never speak again.
Yeah. I don't know about the Archer. I don't know. Maybe he's playing the character how he's supposed to. I just found his character annoying. Maybe he's supposed to be, and maybe the acting is still fine. But the Archer didn't do much for me. I'm going to give him like a six.
Did you ever see the 1990 Super Smash Brothers movie?
I did not. I had no idea that existed.
It existed.
Super Smash Brothers movie.
It's got John Leguizamo in it.
Do you mean the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Super Mario Brothers movie,
okay.
That's it.
Yes, that I'm aware of.
That is that? Okay, yeah, Super Mario Brothers. It is that level of acting. I'm going to give both of them a 3.
Really? Oh, wow. I thought Archer was much better. I mean, Archer. Armstrong. Just, Armstrong's the drunk, right?
Armstrong's the drunk. Archer's the kid. It's cringy.
Yeah, Archer was cringy to me.
That's what they're kind of supposed to be. Like, when you make Deadpool look serious, that's kind of where I'm setting, like, the cringiness, because how much of it is supposed to be slapstick and how much of it is supposed to be a little bit serious? Like, I thought they were atrocious.
Okay, I'm going to partially agree. I mean, I thought Archer was atrocious. Screw it. I'll throw him under the bus, too. I'll give him a 3-2. You've talked me down. Screw this guy. He gets a 3. But I will defend Armstrong. I thought he portrayed the clobberin' drunkard very, very well, as well as he could be. Maybe very, very well. Maybe that's too many varies, but very well. I'll give him a 6. I thought he did a good job for that character.
He's very, 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 very adequate.
He's very, 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 very mediocre, yes.
Who else?
I think the last one we have to hit on is Neville, the guy that played Neville Alcott. What is his name? He deserves to be named.
I felt like he was trying to be Martin Freeman.
Craig Robert Young is his name. I thought he's the best actor in this whole movie. I mean, he actually felt like a real actor. Like, I could see him in an actual movie. I could see him in an actual, like, Sherlock Holmes movie or a James Bond movie as, like, some British intelligence person of some kind. He really struck me the most. I'm going to give him a 9. I actually thought he had the best performance of any actor in this film. Maybe unexpectedly so, since we're so focused on the heroes and the ones with the powers and the ones in the action scenes. But as far as acting goes, like, I really bought Neville. I bought him as his role in MI6. I bought him as a father concerned about his children or about his daughter. I bought him as friend of Ninjak, trying to figure out what's going on, why his friend is suddenly turning on him. I really bought his acting in this, more so than I can say. Like, I feel like everyone else, I kind of, you know, I accepted that they were a B or C level actor and kind of graded them on that scale. This guy actually feels legit.
This guy's got masterpiece classic quality to him.
Absolutely. This guy feels legit. He gets my best actor award.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to give him a 9-2 because when I'm watching him, at some points I almost thought I was watching Martin Freeman's character from Captain America Civil War and Black Panther.
Okay, yeah. That's yeah. I know him. Yeah. I forget his name.
Yeah, like he Bilbo Baggins, that guy.
Yeah.
I think he's the best one. I'll agree with you.
It's not what you'd expect, but I don't really know what else he's been in, but he seems like a legit actor to me. So if he's not doing movies above this level, he should be. He deserves better than this film, actually.
So let's really, you know, jump to the big thing.
I'm just going to say the worst actor is, I think we probably both agree, is you might have him tied, but I think to me it's the one that played Archer. He's worse than Bloodshot, because at least Bloodshot, you can justify Jason David Frank as he's trying to play this sort of rigid character who, you know, but no, Archer has no excuse. The guy sucks.
The kid showed up not knowing his lines. It's like, I'm just going to be really high pitched the entire time. It's like, shut up.
I couldn't stand him on screen at any moment. So he's the worst actor.
He's the worst. Is this... So actually, let's go ahead and just rate the quality, and then let's ask the big question, which is, did this succeed in being a good introductory opportunity for the Valiant universe? I'm going to give the quality and everything, I'm going to give it a 5, because it's just, it's only that. Like, this is a good fan film. I'm disappointed knowing that a second tier comic book publisher put money towards this, especially knowing that they were probably going to get Vin Diesel, who had been slated for Deadpool for Bloodshot, because all these people are so similar, for Bloodshot as an actor and producer as far back as 2015. So it's almost like you should have just saved it for the big, big opportunity. So I'm going to give him a 5.
Yeah. So this wasn't meant to start a universe of any kind. This is really just meant as like an online film to gather some interest.
This was a big marketing campaign, basically.
Right. I'm curious, is the graphic novel version of this, is that supposed to be in Valiant continuity, or is that just a separate thing that's just kind of an adaptation of the film?
On the first page, they literally tell you this is in an adjacent universe.
Okay, so this didn't really happen as far as...
Yeah, so it's an Elseworld type story.
Alrighty, well... That being said, I can't go as low as you. I'm actually shocked at your score. I actually thought you would rate this higher. And I think
if it was a fan film, because, like, you know, on secondprintcomics.com, folks, we do Fan Film Friday, where I show you all the great films and all the bad fan films. If this was just a fan film, I would probably rate it at an 8. Very few fan films get this good, but it wasn't a fan film. So if I'm calling this even like, you know, a low budget marketing experience, because like I'm a watch collector and like Timex is one of my favorite watch brands. Timex had a thing where they made like this little cartoon James Bond to market one of their watches. And they're like 30-second clips for each watch. Like if I'm talking like you made an original story and a story brands behind a certain product or idea, and you're trying to run with that in order to build kind of a cult following behind that, that's what they tried to do here. And in terms of quality, that's not what I would want. I almost feel like they should have done anything else. I feel like this was a good, big, bold attempt. You know, I clap my hands for them. Valiant Entertainment had a very low budget for a lot of their things, which is why they had to double down making the best comics possible. They won almost every award imaginable. I think in 2013, 2014, when they came back, they were like the number one publisher of the year. For this level of quality, even though they teamed up with the best fan film studio, Bat in the Sun, they took themselves out of the fan film category. So if it was a fan film that was just Bat in the Sun using Valiant characters, comparing it to other fan films, I give it an 8. But it's not. It was a marketing tool. So I got to give it a 5.
Okay. I'm trying to judge it on a little bit of a sliding scale because, yeah, I guess it all depends on how you want to look at it. Because like I said, if this were a fan film, it's like a 9. You know, it's like for a fan film. But it's not a fan film, so I can't give it a 9, even a 9 for a fan film. But I did enjoy it enough that I really can't put it as low as a 5. To me, a 5 is like something I wouldn't even recommend someone to watch or spend any time with. So and I wouldn't say that for this. I would say that this is, you know, if you got a spare 90 minutes, I think this is well worth your time, well worth watching and giving a look to. So I can't
put it
that low.
This is often when I put on the TV on background because I just like seeing these characters. And I love the characters in the story so much, I'm willing to excuse a lot of the quality control stuff.
I guess that's a lot of it for me, too. Like, I'm just kind of enjoying what I got for what it is, and I'm letting other stuff slide, like maybe some slightly subpar acting, some not-so-great special effects at times, especially when it comes to Exo Manowar. I think that's probably the biggest disappointment with this film.
There was no acting. Exo. There was no acting from him. No. He was just there.
And really no understanding of his character. Even in the brief glimpses of the other characters, we got to kind of understand their character a little bit, whereas we really know nothing about Exo and even the extent of his powers. He just kind of seems like a big dumb jock in a suit. So that's by far the biggest disappointment.
I saw this film before I started reading the Exo Manowar comics, and I was convinced that he was just a homeless person
that happened upon some armor. Yeah, so I'm still going to give this thing, I'm going to give it a 6.5. That's going to be my hedge. I can't go all the way to 7, but I feel even 6 is a little too low. That's like a D. So I'm going to at least, you know, that's a D minus. I'm going to at least give it, I don't know. It's a D, but yeah, I don't know. I don't even like 6.5. That feels too low. I'm going to say with a 6.5. I think that's
Okay, now let's grade this by letters. So A plus, B, C, minus,
doing
that type of thing.
Two different
yeah,
grade levels?
Yeah, because I almost feel like this is the only way to really justify it. Did it accomplish its goal of being a good introductory platform to the Valiant universe? I'm going to give it a B.
This is a really complicated system. So, okay, on that particular question, is that what you're saying? Did I?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know why we switched to letters here, but I'll run with it.
just be in the moment, okay?
Yeah, as an introductory, sure, I would agree with you. I'll give it a B. It's not an A+. It's not the best introductory. My biggest point, again, comes to the portrayal of Exo Manowar. That was the biggest disappointment here. Everyone else, even the shitty acting of Bloodshot and Little Archer, I think it still gave us a kind of a good enough glimpse into the characters. I think especially Ninjak. Like if I saw this, Ninjak is probably the one I'd want to go check out first, or maybe Shadow
Man
too.
Do you think he was the best choice to kind of be the, you know, the trendsetter for this? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this would have worked as well if they just tried to adapt the Valiant continuity original Unity story where they are trying to track down Exo Manowar. I don't think this would have worked, especially with that actor as the centerpiece. I think if they were going to make one character the centerpiece of this, it had to be Colin King, it had to be Ninjak, and I think it worked perfectly in that regard. So yeah, I'll agree with you on the B, though. I think it's a pretty good introduction to the characters, but we can't go as high as an A because... largely because of Exo Manowar.
Yeah, because like he is their Superman.
Yep.
If Ninjak is Batman and Bloodshot is like Deadpool, Punisher, Wolverine, then Exo is Superman. So it's like you can't And I'm not just talking in terms of in you know, his role in the stories, how important he is. I'm just talking like also in like numbers, dollars. He's the one that is always getting renewed. He's the one that brings in the money to basically fund all the other publishing projects and all the other titles. So it's like, you know, I'm glad that they included him. I think money got in the way of it because there's so much more they could have done. But at the same time, he's such an interesting character. They could have given him some more dialogue. I mean, I like the fact that they gave Eternal Warrior more of a spotlight, but I think they could have shared a little bit.
Yep, indeed. I would. I think that's a pretty thorough analysis, Remso. So overall, though, I would say if we're just putting this on like a should I watch it or not, if I have 90 minutes to spare, I'm going to go an absolutely yes. If we're just doing a binary yes-no on that question, it gets a yes from me.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean,
what about you? Would you say the same?
I'd say the same. I mean, here's the thing, man. I love Valiant. And what I will say that Valiant gets is that they deliver the fan service that you want from the superhero genre, while at the same time being willing to really experiment with their stories. This is not the best Valiant story ever told from Valiant, but it's very base level for people who have no clue what they're watching. Because what I love about Valiant is that they really are willing to be experimental with how they do things with their characters, whereas DC and Marvel have become predictable, even with all their continuity reboots, even with everything. You know, Valiant has been around for around 7 years now as Valiant Entertainment because they've gone through so many buyouts and corporate restructures and everything. At one point, they were just dead and they sold off a bunch of their characters. Valiant has the universe where if you're a comic book reader and you feel like you've been burned out and kind of taken advantage of, Valiant delivers on what I think are the best stories being published right now in the market.
Yeah, I would agree. If you're looking for something different in comics, but you maybe whether you're not you like the superhero genre, I think that Valiant Comics brings something unique to you. Now they did take a hit in a lot of their publishing stuff with COVID and everything, so a lot of things became irregular. But I really recommend a lot of these like these rebooted Valiant series from I think 2012, 2013. Jeff Lemire's Bloodshot, I really enjoyed. Matt Kent's Ninjak, those are the two that really stood out to me, as well as the X-Men Manowar.
Matt Kent is doing the Berserker comic with Keanu Reeves, which just got greenlit for a movie starring Keanu on Netflix.
Ooh, exciting. I'm in.
Which is so weird because I thought that they would have brought him on to script this freaking Ninjak versus the Valiant universe, but they brought in Aaron Shank, who it's like, why not bring in the person that made Valiant what it is?
That would make sense. I think he is credited as he does have a writing credit on this movie. So I think he was at least advising, even if he wasn't the main writer.
Still, it's like one of those things where it's like so much could have happened. I almost wish they didn't do this in a way because I don't feel like it helped them. I think maybe it re-energized some of the existing fans, but like I don't see how this is where you go where if you want to learn whether or not you want to buy Valiant Comics. I see this as you bought a couple comics and you kind of are already interested and you want to learn about them in like one take, and this is what you watch. But it's never one of those situations where it's like it's there and I don't quite know if it's necessary.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think this is going to take someone cold and make them interested in Valiant Comics, but I think it might take someone interested in Valiant Comics and give them something to enjoy and maybe pique their curiosity on some other characters, like Shadow Man, for example. I mean, I think if you were into comics, maybe had some small exposure to Valiant and then saw this Shadow Man scene, you might say, oh, I want to go check out Shadow Man now. You might also say, I never want to read Archer and Armstrong. So, it could go either way.
That's about it. Final impressions. I think if you are a comic book fan, I think if you are interested or are already a big Valiant Comics diehard like Mark and I, you're gonna watch this, and it's fun. Don't take it too seriously. It kills an hour or so, and it's just like it's just one of those things where you could look at it and you can appreciate so much more. For Bloodshot to happen at some point, somebody thought this was necessary. And Mark, you got to go watch Bloodshot, man. I think it is actually Vin Diesel's best movie.
All right, well, I'll make it a priority in the coming weeks here.
Yep. So that's all I got.
All right. Yeah. And I will just reiterate, I think that if you're a comic book fan, if you're someone who's made it this far into this episode of this program, you're probably someone who will at least have a passing enjoyment of this film. I think it's worth watching, largely because, despite its faults, it doesn't take itself overly seriously. So even to the extent that it is kind of cheesy or hammy, it still works because it matches the feel of the film. So
Watch this over Joss Whedon's Justice League any day of the week.
Oh, no question. No question about it. It's an hour shorter, and at least it makes sense. At least the plot flows. At least I understand the motivations of everyone. I can't say that about the JSJL, so to speak, so which shall never be heard from again. Although it's going to make a fascinating piece. I know a fan of ours, Jacob Lindsay, he'd only seen the Snyder Cut, and now our conversation about it made him want to go back and watch the Joss Whedon Cut. And I think, as a curiosity, I would probably want to do the same thing if I hadn't seen it, just to see the difference.
That has some bizarro world stuff. Going from the Snyder Cut to the theatrical version.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Maybe Jake will do a little bonus for us on Patreon about that. I'm signing up our patrons to do work for us.
You've been drafted.
That's what's happening. You've been drafted. All right, but that being said, that's all I got, Remzo. So, that being said, I already said that being said. But that being said, until next time, what do we ask everybody to do?
Read comics! Change the world!
Change the world.
Good night, America.